Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast and our week in IndyCar show presented by Cooper Tires, presented by our friends at the Justice Brothers, and presented by our friend Connor Daly. You got a job, man. So happy for you. How you doing?
Good, man. Obviously, pretty stoked about, you know, what we have. It's been a long, long process to sort it all out and end up where we are. But, you know, we literally could not be in a better position for the Indy 500. Obviously, I want to be a full-time race car driver. But if you were to do the greatest race in the world with, Andretti Autosport, you can die happy, I'd say, if you at least do that once. So I feel like I'm ready to try and just take advantage of it.
Having done the amazing race, Connor Daly is doing the greatest race. Sorry, my bad TV voice came out here.
Well, nailed that one, yeah.
You've got a whole ton of great questions from folks. Some of them sent in before it was known that today's announcement was all about your Andretti Autosport opportunity, so I'll do my best to kind of convert some of those questions beforehand into questions about this opportunity. So let's just go straight up first with our pal Carlos Villalobos, who asks, how does it feel to have the opportunity to drive for Andretti, and will it be just for the Indy 500?
I mean, it's obviously incredible. There's no doubt that they produce some of the best cars at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And there's also, no doubt that I have incredible teammates to learn from. Two Indy 500 champions. It's a recipe for success. I think every time we've seen that fifth car, it's always been fast, whether it's Alonso, whether it's Munoz, Stefan Wilson as well, a little bit last year. It's an exciting thing to think about. But you can't go too crazy, because you got to realize that no matter what, all you have to do is just do the best job you can possibly do. There are plenty of B factors out there that you never know what could happen. But all I want to do is try and execute at maximum efficiency and hope that, the end result is shows the work that we all put in as a team together, all five of us.
So when you and I spoke, I guess, towards the end of last season, towards the middle of last season, just privately, you'd mentioned, hey, things are coming along, things are looking good, talking with a variety of teams, there might be an opportunity at this team to add a third car, possibly. Not 100% if that's going to put me in victory circle, but it could be a good opportunity. It was looking like for a while there, Connor, you had just that, good opportunities. Tell us about how this freaking great opportunity came to pass, because I know I've heard a lot of names who I wasn't necessarily ready to write the story, but I at least was thinking of the headline and the introduction possibly of driver A, B, and C are going to be in that fifth car possibly. How did this come together so that ended up being your name and the Air Force's name?
Well, I mean, undoubtedly there's only one reason that I'm there, and that's because we found a partnership to bring. You know what I mean? It's a business, and Andretti has to profit off of their fifth car, because they run four full-time cars and they don't have, they don't have primary sponsorship sold for all the races for all the cars. So, they have to run that car at the 500 at profit. So, the Air Force gets all the credit for stepping up and wanting to essentially be their hashtag, which is aim high. And we're certainly aiming high, going with the best team at Indy and certainly one of the best teams and the best group of drivers to work with. It's not a press release where I'm, thankful to have been chosen to drive. It took a lot of work. It was work from both sides, and there's a business case, and thankfully, you know, Air Force is also, you know, a partner of the team for the year. So, you know, they're going to be on all four of the, you know, full-time cars and a small presence for the whole year because they're essentially, you know, being named a partner of the team, which I feel, you know, pretty good about. You know, this deal originated, you know, pretty much a year ago this time. And it's cool to see it's how it's progressed, and I can only hope to, you know, do my job as best I can to make them want to do, you know, even more.
Let's go to Neil Joseph. We've had a couple of folks ask similar things, so I'll just roll this into Neil's question. It says, Connor, what was your impression of the Chili Bowl? And obviously said, hopes to see you back in an IndyCar this year, but that Chili Bowl drive of yours seemed to not only strike a lot of interest in folks, but I think anytime we have a recognizable and talented IndyCar driver maintaining that link between IndyCar's past on the dirt, short oval, midget sprint, something similar, and, you know, today's big open wheel cars, you know, at either Indianapolis or anyone else, it really seems to be a point of interest for folks. What was it like for you getting a taste?
I mean, I think it was awesome, and I really appreciated a lot of the people that came up and said that they, you know, they appreciated that I was doing it, and there was a lot of really friendly fans there that just, you know, were incredibly supportive, you know, core dirt racing fans, and I think there is a missing link there between the IndyCar world and the dirt racing world, and I think there are some people who sort of have this, you know, this thought that the fan bases are pitted against each other for some reason. You know, a lot of people were asking me, well, which one's harder, which one's harder, and I'm like, well, you can't say that because it's two entirely.
The answer is yes. They're both extremely hard.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I would say it's a lot harder for an IndyCar guy to go to a dirt car than a dirt car to go to an IndyCar, because, you know, with the downforce and the way the cars are now, you know, you could definitely do it, go from dirt to Indy, but again, it would take you years to get to, you know, when you're really going to go from 220 to, you know, 230 and try and, you know, qualify on the pole or try and, you know, fight for a race win. So it's a challenging environment. There's no practice whatsoever. You know, I spent 6 days there and maybe half an hour on the track. And you know, that I just found to be crazy. But that's just the way it is. You know, that's just the way everyone was like, yep, that's it. You know what I mean? And we're one spot from making another main, and all the time sort of one position away from continuing on. But every single race, except for my heat race, which it was stacked with a lot of really good people, we moved forward. So, you know, that was what I wanted to do. And I think it's already on the cards for me to do more dirt racing this year. Because I've actually found someone to pay me to do it, which is wild. I mean, that's if I'm going to go where I'm employed to drive. So, love that, and love that the support that Jonathan Bird and David Bird have given me to race over there, and they've had an open offer out to any other IndyCar drivers who want to do it. So, you know, no one can say that the chance isn't there, because they're telling me to tell every IndyCar driver, hey, if you guys want to do it, you know, you're more than welcome to do it with me.
Well, there's also a pretty awesome family lineage here too, in that your old man raced Formula One cars, raced prototypes, raced Indy cars, raced just you name it. Your old man would climb into it, loved it, did super, super well. I appreciate the fact that whether it's just that talent being passed on generationally, or just the fact that you grew up in a house where, hey, talent's talent. If someone gives you an opportunity to climb in it, go do it and see if you like it. I appreciate the fact that you're definitely continuing the family tradition here. One thing that we do each week, Connor.
Well, the funny thing about that, though, as well, is my dad was there on Wednesday, and he had obviously never been to an event like that. And after the C main, he was like, well, you know, I think you got to do this, and maybe if you do that. I was like, I literally said to him, I said, have you ever driven one of these cars? Can you give me experience from what you've driven? And he's like, nope. And I was like, exactly. So don't even try this time. I've never not listened to him, because he's always been very, very experienced. But in this case, he just didn't have the experience to be able to offer, because I said, Dad, I promise you, It's the opposite of what we've been doing our whole lives.
Pipe down, old man. I love it. We have our friends from TorontoMotorsports.com, by the way, Connor, and I have a feeling that there will be a daily tune coming out here soon of you and your new Andretti Autosport Indy 500 entry, but thanks to our friends at TorontoMotorsports.com, if you head to their website, not only are you going to find a ton of great motor racing swag and memorabilia, there's also some fun stuff there. Lots of stickers, lots of cartoon bits, lots of Hinch and Canadian stuff, and Robert Wickens bits, so thanks again to our friends at TorontoMotorsports.com for their support. So we have a couple questions in here for me as well. Not as many as usual, so I figured rather than do them all by myself in the beginning, we'll just roll them into our interview here, brother. So we got one from Daniel Kincaid asking about any word on whether Felipe Nasr or Pascal Wehrlein might get a chance to test or race an IndyCar this season, and also have one coming in from Reddit from Sleeping BMW. Asks if any of the big names from IMSA like Timo Bernhard might get to do an IndyCar race. Haven't heard anything on realness on that front. I would just say this, and I've said it before, and it's just purely recognizing talent. I think every day that Felipe Nasr is not an IndyCar driver is somebody's loss. That guy is ridiculous. So it's perfect when we see that you have a great opportunity at Indy, and obviously you'll be trying to expand that if you can find more support. I also look at a guy like a Felipe Nasr and realize that he made it to F1 with no money out of his own pocket based on talent, and I'm glad to see he's employed in IMSA. But yeah,
you sure about that?
Yes. Yes. That guy is ridiculous. Let's see.
We've
got a question here from Ben Tyler. And this is talking about something I know you spent many hours doing yesterday. Other than an IndyCar, what is your favorite car and track to drive in Forza?
We just finished a nice little stream just the night before. I don't know. Forza's been a lot of fun. We've just kind of got on there and had a good time. Driving the NASCARs at Homestead has been funny. And the Mercedes Super Trucks at Road America was quite a lot of fun. So we just have a great time on there. Get a lot of people involved, a lot of people watching, and it's been a good time.
Nathan DeRover, very important question. Do you prefer SpaghettiOs with meatballs, mini hot dogs, or plain?
Well, I don't really eat any meat still, so I don't know. I guess just SpaghettiOs? Or there's no meat in there. I don't know. I haven't had SpaghettiOs since I was probably 12.
I love the fact that folks assume it's a staple of your diet, though. I mean, that's kind of baller, you know?
Interesting.
Well, and there's a follow-up question here, which guides us back to your comment. This comes in from Dean Ackerman, who says, I just finished listening to Alexander Rossi's episode of Dinner with Racers. He says he gave you a hard time about your grocery contributions while you all were roommates, but that was recorded before you went vegan, he believes. How's that going for you, and do you notice any benefits from eating this way?
I'm not really vegan anymore. I'd say, like, I still eat fish. But I still feel great. Cutting out red meat, chicken has been really good for me. I essentially, when I lost, 15, 16, 17 pounds, I've just kept it off, which is nice. And if anything, I'm still, after my IndyCar physical this year, I was lighter than I was last year, beginning of the year, so it's all good. I try to only go shopping for groceries like once every month and a half.
Wow.
And I spend about $120. So I don't eat a lot. I try to stay on a budget because I don't actually have a job, a real job. Essentially, I have a job for 3 weeks of the year. Actually, this year looks better for employment status, but last year I made no money and went in debt. So this year I got to rebound a little bit.
Yeah, our man Robin Miller filed a great story about you having to take out a loan to complete last year's Indy 500 budget and so on. So,
yep.
A, I like the reduced budget at the grocery store, and B, you just maybe driving a little more often. So Yeah, no taking out loans. That's all we're saying. We're trying to get you to a place
Yeah.
where that doesn't have to happen. Although
Trust me, I don't want to.
I believe I know a guy by the name of Scott Tucker who can help you with some payday loans, but
Yeah, big hit on Netflix, yeah.
yes, he hasn't been as easy to get a hold of late. Let's see, where should we go next? Let's go to Travis Bender, and also Bill Burns throws in a question similar. Says you've had a huge variety of things you've raced over the last 12 months. Has one been your favorite, and is there one where you maybe learned the most? And Bill asks, when are you get a chance to do some more NASCAR Xfinity races? So, of all the things you've driven the past year, anything stand out as like, yeah, that was fun, and maybe you learned a lot too?
Well, I think the Xfinity car was really enjoyable. I mean, it was just thrust into the deep end. It didn't matter that we did, two sim days. It's still so different to what what I'm used to feeling in an Indy car. And but the racing was great fun, and I would love to do that again. Obviously, the only reason I was there is because there was a sponsor paying for it that ended up not wanting to be my sponsor. But that's sadly how any of this stuff is happening for me. Is the only way we're gonna do it is if there's realistically a financial piece behind it. So I would love to do more of NASCAR stuff, but there are also probably 100 million drivers in the NASCAR pipeline that are also fighting for the same seat. So we'll see. Would love to, but really enjoyed the Xfinity race. Have really enjoyed the dirt stuff. And obviously, any IndyCar race that I can do is a lot of fun too, because I still obviously love that. But yeah, the NASCAR experience was certainly enjoyable and new.
Travis also asks, what is Graham Rahal performance doing to your WRX? So we got a couple of Rahal questions for you here.
I mean, honestly, my car has been without an engine for a year, so, and I didn't make any money last year, so, but I've literally borrowed people's cars the entire of 2018. Graham Rahal let me borrow his Acura RS or TSX for 2 months. I had an Infiniti from Dreier Heimbel for 2 months. I've been all over the map like a total gypsy. Had my mom's car for a little while until she needed it again, and as of late, Greg Huebler Chevrolet has given me a car for the last couple weeks. They're supposed to have it back by now, but my Subaru still doesn't have the engine in it, so. Yeah, it's just getting fixed. That's literally it. I'm not upgrading it at all. I'm just literally the engine had to be rebuilt, and so it's in now, I think, and hopefully it'll be done. Graham's done a great job for me, though. He's got an incredible shop over there, and he's helped me out a lot because he used to have a Subaru STI back when he was, 18 or 19 or something. So it's just getting fixed. That's all, I promise. And then I can have my own car to drive again with no
Well,
air conditioning in the summer.
I mean, there's the Cosworth block and heads you can go for
Yeah.
STI. I mean, trust me, as someone who used to do a very, very poor job of running an STI in endurance racing, I can think of all kinds of ways to spend your money.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. This is an interesting one. Now, this comes in from Diane Phillips, who asks, do you have a regular job now? Since you're only racing the Indy 500. And again, I wouldn't expect you to talk about true dollars and cents, but she's curious, or does this Indy 500 deal do enough to help pay your bills for the year? How do you, and there are others in this boat, right, who primarily just do the 500. Maybe just share some general insights on the fact that, yeah, this is the month of May, but there's 11 other months of the year, and those bills are due just the same.
Yeah, well, I think the Indy 500 is unique in the fact that it is still available to sell. It is marketable. It is valuable to companies. Last year was a particularly unique situation because the budgets have sort of gone up lately for the Indy 500. If I were to explain how drivers make a living, every single person would be a different situation. You could literally make your living in the month of May. Townsend Bell used to make $500,000 or something wild, just by doing the Indy 500, but he's also a sponsorship wizard and an absolute incredible salesman. But, you know, realistically, if you, you know, if you somehow happen to find, you know, a full sponsor like we have with the U.S. Air Force, you can absolutely make, you know, make your living, or at least make enough of a living to pay the bills, you know, during the month of May. And thankfully, Honda is also, you know, using me in the fastest seat in sports, I think, for at least 3 weekends. And that's something that they pay you to do, which is great. And I pretty much just do anything else to try and sell around Indy. I mean, selling space at Indy is the most important thing for not only trying to do more races, but also to make a living. So all I do is sell, and the amount that I sell basically helps the, you know, the, whether or not I can buy groceries every month or whether I have to, you know, live off of oyster crackers for, you know, a week.
Well, I did just see that there's a racing podcast that is now seeking folks to commit to a monthly spend via Patreon to keep their thing going. If we got to get a Connor Daly IndyCar Patreon page going on, I mean, you know, I'd contribute $5 just, you know, just for the fun of trying to help a guy get, you know, whatever little vegan whatever burger. I don't know how many of those you're going to find in Indy, but...
Well, that's why I'm on Twitch.
Well,
Twitch is another new revenue stream. I mean, it's something I love to do, play video games. You know, I work during the day, you know, whatever, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., as people say, and then after that, no one in the sponsorship world's doing business, so, you know, I can play video games, and the community on Twitch is incredible, and they're supportive, and you know, there's money coming in on that, which is awesome.
Well, and that was the next question from Grant Strouder, who asks if you've considered completely moving over to Twitch, all your social media, or some other platform for career content creation, and also asks, conversely, if you reached out to Twitch to see if they would sponsor you.
Well, I mean, you can't entirely switch all of your social media over to Twitch, but it's certainly an added platform. And it's helpful. People are making an absolutely ridiculous amount of money on Twitch, and every time I tell it to people, they don't believe me. And I promise you, it is true. We're talking 8 figures easily for a lot of people, which is just absolutely outstanding. And that's just the way it is. I mean, that's where the youth pay attention. That's where, you know, ad revenue is going. And no, I haven't reached out directly to Twitch because I don't really know who to get in touch with there. I tweet them all the time, but there's so many people in the Twitch family, in this Twitch world, that I'm sure they're getting hit up all the time, and racing isn't probably their biggest demographic at the moment.
Got a question here from at Very Fake Phil. That's a great Twitter handle. What will it be like to be teammates with Rossi, your pal from the Amazing Race? Obviously, the two of you are good friends and so on, but in terms of being actual on-track teammates, what do you think this is going to be like? And is this something you've been hoping to have happen?
You know what I have? I think it's going to be good. Alex, you know, Alex has always tried to be very helpful to me. I think he's been really cool about sort of, I think he knows that I can do the job, and I think he's always sort of he's seen the situations that I've been in, because I'm, you know, completely honest about things, you know, to him, and he can see it right firsthand, some of the stuff that I've had to deal with in my career ever since, you know, we were both rookies together. I'm excited. I think he's obviously incredibly talented, and he's got a great group of people around him. And I want to try and, you know, see what that's like, and see, you know, see the data, see, you know, see how he works. And obviously, you know, we'll be teammates. So he's going to be running for a championship without a doubt. And if I can, you know, benefit the team in any way, I would love to be doing that. But obviously, you know, he knows that this is my only shot. But you know, I had dinner with him 2 nights ago, and you know, already talking about sort of, you know, the system, how it's all working, that, you know, I'll be so so blown away by how different it is, but in a good way. I can't wait to, just can't wait to get things going.
Don't want to give away anything if you've got plans here, but I'm definitely thinking some sort of Twitch-related Connor Daly event during the month of May. That might draw a pretty cool crowd and be a another extension of your brand that's unique to you while helping to bring more fans to the Indy 500.
It is not off the table.
Okay. Let's see. We'll go to a question for me here from Tim Calabro. He says, hey, Marshall, how long in advance do you know when you'll be having live events during a race weekend? If we can only get to one or two races, having a live week in IndyCar or week in sports cars might be the deal breaker. Thank you, Tim. Let's just say that having gotten home from the Rolex 24 at Daytona, where we had a really fun week in sports cars live episode courtesy of Mazda Team Yost, on the Friday, we will be trying to get more together for as many IMSA races as possible, as many IndyCar races as possible. And honestly, now that I'm home and vaguely caught up on rest, this is one of my to-do items to get things mapped out with series and our partners in the Justice Brothers and Cooper Tires and Tracks. So stay tuned there, my friend. Let's see. I'm just trying to think of one or two more we can go to here on the mighty Twitter. Damian Neild says, why no Connor at the Rolex 24? I know you asked me, and I've been, like I do with a lot of drivers who, definitely respect, try and share opportunities when I hear about them and hope you all can find whatever. Obviously, things didn't work out there, but did you feel like you came close to anything, or was it just purely everybody had their hands out and that didn't quite fit?
Yeah, it's tough, man. I mean, the sports car world, you see so many drivers down there, but it's a world that, a lot of people are very loyal to the guys that, have been there a while, which is really cool. And in the end, more so than ever there, there is always, a couple people that are the wheels behind, the operation and the financial wheels that, that have to be in place. So, there's everyone that I asked, there's obviously a price tag. Going to the Roar was good though. It was great to talk to a lot of people. And, I certainly have a lot of respect for the level of racing that, that is taking place there. And, so many great drivers and so many good people, just haven't found my fit yet. In 2015, when I was doing some of the, LMPC stuff, I happened to fit right in. I had Jonathan George, suggest me for a seat, and thankfully it was a seat that, did not require me to have any funding, and there, those are very rare. And so I got lucky. And I think a lot of the same things, could be said about, about this year. You could get lucky again, and I didn't do the Rolex in 2015, but I got a seat for Sebring. So Sebring started it all for me that year. But yeah, I mean, it's just every level of the sport right now is struggling for cash, and we all know that. But obviously, there are still people that are making it happen because there's an incredible lineup at Daytona. It's just every single piece of funding and support that I have is purely sold around the Indy 500, and I haven't been able to sell anything else yet, but yeah, still trying for sure.
Two more from Twitter. Let's go to Lance Snyder, who says, Connor, are you still planning to get revenge on Saucy Rossi for ruining your life on a live stream a couple of weeks ago? First of all, tell me what happened.
He tried to do it again. He took us out of Road America and the Formula Mazdas, but it was all in jest. We're having a great time out there on the internet. People are sometimes taking it seriously, but we're having a great time. Alex is actually really good at Forza, considering he doesn't actually play video games that much. But yeah, we had a great time last night on the stream, and it's just fun. And we have a great time. He's shown the old chrome horn a couple times, but hey, what goes around comes around on the internet.
Good. Let's go to Ryan Terpstra, who says, are you allowed to let us peek behind the curtain on the amazing race? He asks, is it as seen on TV, or are there certain things that are necessary to polish the finished product? Basically, a question of how much reality TV is it in terms of kind of pre-produced content and scripted stuff versus how genuinely real was it that was displayed in people's homes?
Yeah, I immediately saw a guy respond to that too, saying it was all a sham and everything's pretty much orchestrated. And I was like, it's actually not true. I mean, it was pretty real. The only thing that, you know, we pre-filmed was essentially the, you know, the first episode, the all the intros with everyone and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, as far as we could tell, it was pretty legit. I mean, obviously the challenges that we're doing are judged by locals there, but really producers. So, you know, if we did it well enough, the producers will give, you know, the go ahead to, you know, to let us pass to the next stuff for the next activity. So I guess technically there could be some, you know, some, I guess, I don't even know what you would call it, but no, I mean, for us, you know, if we did well, we ended up doing well in the race leg. And if we did something stupid, then we ended up suffering for it. So as far as I've seen, it's been pretty legit. And it was, you know, it was tough. It was hard. It was really, really challenging. And they had a lot of difficult stuff for us. A lot of rules to follow that, you know, people will really never see. And a lot of, yeah, just a lot of craziness that definitely you would never see on camera, but for the most part, absolutely, you know, all pretty legit.
Let's go to Reddit here. Go back to Reddit. Got a couple of good ones. Counterbalance Cove 2 has one for me. And I've actually mentioned this before, but I love the question. This is, what are the chances of IMS honoring Robin Miller 1 year for his contributions to IndyCar racing? He feels like one of the series' biggest protagonists, and he does a great job of introducing people to the history of IndyCar, IMS, and the 500. And then someone followed up with introducing the Robin Miller restroom facilities. Thank you. I have mentioned this to Mark Miles before. I might have mentioned it to our man, Doug Bowles. And not specific to Robin, but just on the topic of, keep in mind, we have a number of veteran, truly veteran reporters. Robin being probably number one to me, but a Gordon Kirby, a Jonathan Ingram, a David Phillips. There are many who are many years my senior who've covered IndyCar. Maybe some have retired, or maybe some are like Gordon, are just more of authors of books today than actual race reporting. But just as we take time, Connor, to honor the legendary driver A and B who did this amazing thing when they're, you know, in their 60s or 70s, I don't know if some of the folks who actually act as the conduit between the sport and the fans, who tell those stories, positive or negative, who are there in front of the TV camera, you know, Paul Page and Gary Gerald and Bob Vart. I mean, there's so many we could mention, but would just say that, you know, look, if anyone were to ever think of me for that, it would be silly and crazy, but it'd also be 25, 30 years down the road. So at least for me, knowing how much I respect these men and women who've done this job, part of me thinks IndyCar and IMS, before some of these folks get too old and pass on, need to be considered in that same light. And just as, you know, folks are inducted into Hall of Fames or honored on an annual basis, don't forget the folks who toil away on pit lane getting those stories, or in media centers typing, or in trucks producing those TV shows, or standing in front of the camera. They're as much a part of the show as anyone, and yet it seems like the Robin Millers of the world and the Terry Lingners of the world and so on and so forth just are not part of the general mindset of folks who deserve their day in the sun.
I mean, there are so many people that are obviously crucial to making our sport what it is, and making sure our fans see what it is. And I think Robin for sure is one of the most honest, you know, black and white, you know, he sees it how it is. You know, I try to do the same thing. I mean, I'm not I never sugarcoat anything. I never try and, you know, just avoid anything that's not real, even if it's a criticism of myself. You know, I criticize myself more than anyone almost, but Robin, and yourself, I mean, everyone who really has a passion for the sport does such a good job covering it, and we need the coverage, right? And our sport is not the NBA, the NFL, or the MLB, and so we have to thank you guys for, you know, for giving us the time of day and for the, you know, the passion that you guys have for the sport.
Well, bottom line is there are a lot of folks who blaze the trail that I walk on, and others who are, say, below 50 years old happen to walk on. So it would be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, Gordon Kirby was a name that I used to get, you know, I used to read his stuff a lot, and, you know, my dad had, you know, told so much, you know, had definitely, he's like, hey, you got to talk to Gordon Kirby, you got to talk to Gordon Kirby all the time. I was like, oh man, yeah, that guy's a legend, right? So there's a lot of incredible people who I've had the chance to meet, and, you know, the Mark Hughes, you know, of the world, like great, you know, really smart people from all around the world, that just have a passion for the sport, and that's why I think racing is just so infectious.
Well, hopefully they will be honored here in the coming years. So let's see, let's go to another comment here on Reddit. Do you think it'd be possible to have either Kim Green or Kevin Savory on the show? I'd be really interested in hearing about the business side of promoting races. Great idea. I think Kim Green popped into my head once as an idea, but it fell out. So I'm going to make a note here. So that will be a great idea. Hopefully Kim will be up. I mean, Kim's not usually not the one seeking microphones and such, but hopefully we can get him on to do just that. So that would be a lot of fun. Let's see, where should we go next? Got a question, actually the first question here, most asked on Reddit, wanting to know, do you ever get back to Ireland that often? When do you get to get back to replenish your Irish soul?
You know, man, I haven't been there enough. I actually told my dad, as this Andretti deal was coming together, you know, I sort of knew what my year was going to look like, and it was obviously better than last year. And I said, man, we got to go back to Ireland. My dad goes back for Christmas to see my Nana over there and my aunts and uncles that are over there. Some of my cousins, actually, oddly enough, they live in the Cayman Islands now. So this is, everyone's sort of separated a little bit. But I have not been to Ireland since probably 2011.
Wow.
When I was racing in England and I was living in England. And so it's been a while. And I miss it for sure. You know, I don't get to see my Irish family, you know, as much as I'd like to. But you know, that's the hard part about adult life. You know what I mean? Everyone's got something going on. Everyone's busy. You know, trying to, you know, have a job, make a living. But I do think at the end of this year, I'm definitely going to go back over.
I'm going to rattle through some more questions here. We're moving over to Facebook to close. Some of these are awesome. Craig Johnson asks, Connor, who would win an arm wrestling match between you and Graham Rahal? Man, I could go either way on this one. Yeah, because he's got the leverage, right? I mean, yeah. if we're talking, he's got those long arms, but, you know, you might not be the tallest guy in the world, man, but you're a solid cat. There's part of me that thinks short range, if he can't really, you know, get all that leverage going, you might drop our man. What do you think? I'm onto something there?
No, that's a really interesting matchup there, Marshall. I think Graham does have the height and the leverage, but I've got girthy arms and really aggressive mindset right now because he just charged me money to fix my Subaru. So I'm fighting back with some heat, but he's got some of that leverage and he's got the Rahal tall, you know, racing driver build, so I don't know.
I think the two of you need to arm wrestle over that final bill with the cash, with your hands strapped together and the cash in the middle. And whomever wins gets to hold on to that cash.
I like that idea. Tell me where to go.
I'll film it. Robin will be the play-by-play guy.
I think it on Twitch.
Oh, I mean, done deal, man. We are all... let's see. Nick Parker asks if there are any words about onboard cameras for this year. Should we expect anything new, or will it most likely be the same angles? Haven't heard about anything new, Nick. we'll need to reach out to our friends at NBC Sports and IMSP and BSI, and I'll see what I can find out there. But I think with all the new things that they did last year, I don't know if there are going to be any new locations, but let me try and find out for you on that one. Here's one.
I know I'm trying to get one for Indy, but I know they're expensive.
Well, maybe we'll just strap your phone to the top of your helmet, and we'll see if we hopefully get a good Wi-Fi signal, and you can live stream that sucker. Definitely one for you here, coming in from Tori Claret. Says, Connor, how important do you feel the rise in esports is to fan engagement for IndyCar, and would you support and or participate in an esports IndyCar championship? He says the finalists would play in the big screen at Indy, and the winner gets a Road to Indy scholarship.
Oh, well, it was all good until that last part. You know, the Road to Indy scholarship, that's tough. I mean, that's really hard to justify, but I that brings up a very interesting point. I am actually now an ambassador for an esports team.
Tell us about it.
I guess we haven't really announced anything yet, but I'm going to be working with this team called Lazarus, and they have, oddly enough, that's the GP2 team I drove for, they have approached me, to help them out, to be a part of their program. They got a lot of really good players on Forza, all across, Fortnite, Call of Duty, and they put a lot of money into it, and it's actually an incredible platform. But what they want to establish is an e-IndyCar championship, which I think is great. And I think we absolutely need it. There's a reason why every single Formula One team has an esports team. There's a reason why Drake and Mark Cuban and all these massive money guys, Steve Aoki, they all own esports teams, because it's massive. And the amount of people that are watching these things on the internet, we obviously never see them on TV. It's not on ESPN. It's not on ABC, NBC, whatever. But the amount of viewers that those guys are getting on YouTube and Twitch and any platform on the internet is absolutely astounding. And there's a reason why most professional Call of Duty players and Overwatch players and just racers, I think racing hasn't quite hit a massive spike in revenue, but there are people making a lot of money playing video games, and I think it's an incredible idea. Have an event at every IndyCar race. We broadcast it. Each team, each IndyCar team has an esports team, because it's not, they don't have to ask them for money because it's a video game. So there's no real assets. Which is kind of cool, and I think it's something that I'm actually going to be working on a lot this year, and talking to IndyCar about it, because I think it is really cool, and I think I am going to try and do some more stuff in that realm for sure.
You just seem like the perfect guy to not only do that, to work with IndyCar, but just the face to represent it. I mean, and I'm not blowing smoke here. I just think of the lanes for you to find that could be uniquely yours, but that benefit you, but also benefit IndyCar, and obviously with the link to IMS through Doug, it just seems like something, man, that the more you invest into this time-wise and building relationships, trying to make something like this happen, it just feels like it's only going to pay you back many, many times over.
I think there's a lot of great potential there for sure, so stay tuned on that.
All right, let's go to, it's an interesting one from Corey Matthews. Says, Connor, related to the Chili Bowl, so did you have to discuss that with your sponsors/owners prior to running it? And Corey mentions, for instance, Kyle Larson talks about wanting to do the double, but he always has to try and clear it with Chip before making that possible. What about you? Is that something where you had to go to the folks you knew you were going to be doing the 500 with and say, hey, I want to go do something crazy, is that okay? Or is that not something you had to do?
No, they don't care about me that much. I have no bosses. I mean, I do now that I've signed my Andretti contract. But I live life one day at a time, and I'm basically just trying to race anything, drive anything, anytime. And until someone tells me no, which I can't really imagine happening, I'm just going to keep on doing it. So Yeah, I have no higher powers to report to. Kyle Larson is worth a lot of money and is an extremely good NASCAR driver. So I can, well, extremely good driver of everything. So I would love to see him do the Indy 500, but I can understand there being some, you know, some hurdles he's got to get over first.
Let's see. Let's go to, got a bunch of great questions here to try and close out the show. Ben Cohen asks me if there are any rumblings of other large sponsorship announcements due to come before the start of the season for both the series and teams. I haven't heard of anything giant, Ben. I do know that we are anticipating, you know, a couple of teams. You mentioned here ECR. I do expect to hear some things from them, obviously, on sponsors to help them, you know, to round out their season. I didn't get any real details, but I did hear that Jay Fry's trip last weekend to the Rolex 24, that there were at least two very good meetings with manufacturers that took place on the potential of IndyCar's third manufacturer coming in a couple of years from now. So that, again, just encouraging, no promises, but you'd rather hear good things happen than, yeah, boy, that was a wasted trip. So I would say that's a very positive thing. Beyond that, I mean, this might not be directly on the sponsorship side, but did speak with Ricardo Juncos, who mentioned he thinks they might be putting out some news this week about their, at least, initial plans for 2019, the races they will do, and obviously hope to add in a few more. So they're another team that are searching for funded drivers and sponsorship to do more rounds. But I don't know if we have any big showstoppers left to roll out, Ben. NTT Data was obviously a big one. Then Arrow stepping up to the point to where SPM renamed themselves Arrow SPM. And we've had some pretty good ones for sure. But I don't know if we have any other giant ones in the works. But obviously we will keep our ears down and listening. Let's see. Lori Carter asks you, Connor, what was your favorite track to race at in Europe, and also your least favorite?
Least favorite Europe. Honestly, European tracks, all of them are so good. I mean, such high quality circuits. You know, I was really lucky to be able to drive on a lot of them. My favorite track, obviously, Spa. Incredible. Spa and honestly, Yas Marina. I really like Yas Marina. Great place for, you know, for an event. But least favorite, my least favorite track of all time is Lime Rock Park. Hate that place.
Why?
I don't know. I've raced there twice and been in terrible crashes each time, and I have no idea why. So
Fair enough.
Don't like that place. But in Europe, I'd say least favorite would be, I don't know.
Well, Lori also mentions, thank you for the cameo you did for my birthday a few weeks ago. It was awesome. So,
no problem.
Let's see. Last couple here. One from Jordan Darwin. Actually, no, let's go with Evan Kempe first. Says, Connor, if you could pick any car number and livery from IndyCar history to use in the future, what would it be?
Any car number from what?
Any car number and any livery from IndyCar history to use in the future, what would it be?
Well, I mean, number 22 is close to my heart, so I would love to be 22 again.
Did your old man use that at Raynor, I'm trying to think?
He used it in Formula One.
Formula One.
Yeah, and honestly, livery-wise, I have the diecast on my kitchen table of the, I'm going to look at it right now, it's the Thomas Schechter Pennzoil Panther Racing car that was a special edition Terminator 3 Rise of the Machines car, and it looks awesome, let me tell you. And I have the diecast car for it sitting right here, and I've had it ever since, because they didn't make a lot of them, I don't think. Beautiful car, and obviously I grew up, you know, really close to Panther Racing. But other than that, I mean, for me, growing up, liveries, the car just had to look cool. Like, it just had to look awesome. I didn't care who was driving it, whenever I showed up to Indy 500 practice week, I just couldn't wait to see what these cars were going to look like. And there were a lot of, you know, there were a lot of cool ones over the years. I always liked Alex Barron's Rayovac car. I think that was what it was.
Wow, we're pulling out some random ones. I love this.
Oh yeah, really colorful. And then, honestly, the Robbie McGee Energizer car.
Robbie
cool,
McGee, look at that.
Robbie McGee. Hey, I'm a historian. It's all really random stuff, but I tell you what, I had a really good appreciation for liveries such as my diecast car collection would show.
This is the first ever Robbie McGee reference on the Week in IndyCar, presented by Cooper Tires and the Justice Brothers. I didn't know
huge
I could love
Robbie
you.
McGee,
I didn't know I could love you anymore. I mean, what, Missouri's finest? I forget exactly which state he's from, but Midwest finest, USF 2000 talent for sure, who made the jump to the Indy Racing League, made it look somewhat easy. Definitely remember his crew chief, Steve Freed, got run over, actually, ran over his head at the Indy 500. I don't remember the exact circumstances, whether it was another car hitting him or what, but just remember that Robbie's chief mechanic and crew chief was in a bad way. We're all pulling for him, and just, yeah, there was a lot of love going on there. Great little team. That was before he went to Treadway, but good on
and
you, man.
Panther.
Good
and
on you.
Panther. Yeah, you got a shot with Panther Racing, and I'll never forget. I played Xbox with Robbie McGee, and I thought it was the coolest moment of my young childhood. And to this day, we are still Xbox Live friends. He plays Xbox still, and I remember he came to the race at Gateway in 2017 that went really well for me, and I thought it was great. I mean, I loved chatting with that guy. I think he was underappreciated in his era. I don't know. I like a lot of the underdog stories, you know.
You're an animal. I love it. All right, last couple ones here. Jordan Darwin says, Marshall, with the windscreens coming in 2019, would there be an opportunity to go back to open-faced helmets again? While it'd be cool to see driver faces once more, well, I'm not sure I agree with you there, I would suppose faces would need to be covered by a balaclava or similar for fire protection. Still, reducing the mass on a driver's head should reduce injuries and crashes, right? Well, I'll just go this direction, Jordan. I love the spirit behind your question. I would just say that a windscreen is never going to be a truly bulletproof, deflect everything coming out of driver type thing. It's not going to stop everything. And in a worst case scenario, I'm not seeing a full-faced helmet would magically deflect a big heavy wheel and tire assembly, where an open face helmet would fail completely. Just saying that if I were a driver, if I were a Connor Daly, even with a windscreen, I would want to know that my helmet was fully enclosed to give me the best odds of surviving something, at least to increase the percentages. What about you? What do you think, Connor?
I like collecting helmets, so I'm all for full face helmets still and trading with the guys. I can't imagine. As American as retro as I appreciate, I can't see myself saddling up with a half a face helmet and a balaclava thinking, here we go, I'm going to go 240 miles an hour and possibly catch on fire and explode. So I'd rather have my face covered for that type of scenario. Because, yeah, that just sounds like a better idea. The windscreen is certainly not a Star Trek, like, laser shield or anything that's going to just deflect flying debris. It's certainly, the idea behind it and the science behind it is incredible. Obviously, we've seen some of the recent data on it, and it's awesome. But it's, you can't stop everything.
All right, we got three to go. Then we are going to get on with our days. We're going to go to our pal Kevin Frederico. Says, hey, Connor. Have you ever thought about being an on-air talent for IndyCar? He says, it seems like it's been hell on you looking for sponsors and opportunities in racing. Figured it'd be better from a career standpoint if you could capitalize and all the great things happening, while being a younger on-air personality and talent to help connect to younger demographics in our sport. So, obviously, you'd rather be the guy racing an IndyCar every weekend, so you'd have no reason to be in the booth, but at least while you're trying to become that full-time IndyCar driver again, would it interest you if the opportunity opened?
Well, it's here's the story behind that. To be on a television broadcast, you sort of have to have a very high level of commitment, because this is, you know, you're dealing with NBC. You know, this isn't just, you know, me showing up for like a, you know, doing some radio or something like that every now and then. So you have to be able to commit, and that's the thing. Right now, you know, I talk to Terry Lingner all the time. I say, hey, Terry, you know, I'm ready to go whenever you want to do some TV. But, you know, if you would have asked me this time last year, would I have done 4 IndyCar races, you know, I would have told you you're crazy. And so if I would have committed to doing TV for, you know, 3 or 4, you know, or any time of the season, and all of a sudden I can't do that, you know, that sort of puts them in a tough spot. So, you know, I'm not in the fortunate legendary status of Townsend Bell and AJ Allmendinger to where they can, you know, race and do TV at the same time. But yeah, it's something that I obviously would love to do. I love talking about racing, and I would love to do television. And I think at some point in my life I will do that. And I would love to do that. But for right now, literally the only thing I wake up and think about every day is how I'm going to get into a race car again. And I can't give up on that yet.
Let's see. Let's go to James Litticoat, who says, Marshall, will you be at the test on February 8th? And I guess the easiest way to put it is, James, the next two things I'm doing, having just gotten home from the Rolex 24, is heading to Monterey for the 23 cars that will be rocking up for the test there, and then turning around right after and heading to COTA, where we will have 25 cars. That also reminds me I need to write this story. That's next for me. James also asks, Connor, are there any wedding pranks you have planned for Hinch?
Well, I don't know if I'm supposed to say it or not, but this weekend's Hinch's bachelor party, so I that should be an interesting situation. But wedding pranks, I don't know. I feel like it's inappropriate to mess with people's weddings. That seems like a big day. I don't really know much about weddings or relationships, but it seems like that's a big day. So I don't know. We'll see. I might put my head together with old Marco and see what there's what we could brew up. But I'm sure that it'll be a very fun and enjoyable wedding.
I'll just say this. If we do not have photos of Hinch naked, taped to a light pole or something downtown somewhere, y'all have failed as friends, okay? That's all I'm saying. Let's go to our last...
Interesting thought.
Yep, let's go to our last question here from our pal Vincent Anderson. He says, how many races, Connor, have you snuck into just to look for a ride? So I guess the secret is you normally have a hard card, but that might be an interesting answer, though. I don't know if the sneak-in part, but... how many races do you figure you've gone to in recent years where your name wasn't on the entry list, but you were there trying to make something happen or do something to advance your career?
I mean, all the time. I mean, at the Roar, I was using Sebastian Saavedra's credential, and I had no intention of buying a credential because I don't have any money.
Don't find him, even though he's not a member, so I don't think you can find him.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm sorry. I like to be honest, and I'm sure, you know, I was tweeting about him and Instagramming about him, so I was giving him some love.
There's a guy who's not a member of the media named Rami Mazroor, who you know Rami. Everybody knows Rami.
Everyone does.
Rami somehow, I don't know the exact year, but was mistakenly credentialed for like a Pirelli World Challenge Series race. And whatever year it was, 2013, 2014, I don't know. He holds on to that and brings that to every race and uses that as the... So it could be an IndyCar race. And however he works it, he will find the person at the gate who's not really paying attention. And even though he hasn't paid to get in, he will bust out that 5-6 year old world challenge credential, get in.
Oh, yeah.
And then next thing you know, he'll be in the media center. I think at Petit Le Mans, like 2 or 3 years ago, I saw him walk in, and I just observe this stuff because it's so amazing, and saw him go over to the little kind of craft services table. I think he grabbed 4 bags of sour cream and onion chips, sat down, wolfed down all 4 bags, got up and left, right? Couldn't be bothered to throw them into the trash. I think it was his kind of passive-aggressive equivalent of dropping the mic. Ha-ha, I got into your media center when I shouldn't have, and I ate your Lay's potato chips, and I left the bags behind, suckers. Just amazing. So if you can get into the Roar using Saavedra's credential and actually do something that's positive to give back to Seb, who now just won a Rolex watch, by the way, for winning the class.
And to be fair, I am the only reason that he went to the Roar to then get the Dragon Speed ride to then win the Rolex.
What? So,
oh, yeah. This is a great story. We were literally playing Call of Duty together on Xbox, talking about going down to the Roar. And I said, man, I sort of feel like I have to go down to the Roar. I mean, I don't want to, but I feel like I need to. And he's like, yeah, man, I haven't really thought about going. But now that you say it, I think we should probably go. And I was like, yeah. And this is literally 3 days before the Roar. And so we looked at all the cheapest flights we could get. And he said he would rent the car. And I found us a place to stay for the Roar. And sure enough, he gets down there and he figures out a situation with Dragon Speed. And now he's got a Rolex. And I was like, it was a great team effort there that we had.
Well, I think that means you guys are, what, 1 week on, 1 week off, and getting to wear that baller Rolex? I mean,
I want it for at least 2 days.
Okay,
yeah.
Fair. I mean, at least let him borrow it for...
Or a picture of it.
Or Hinch's wedding. Let him... Come on,
yeah.
Seb. Come on, brother.
Yeah.
Daly, you're the best, man. You know how much I appreciate you and the time you spend, and I know that my listeners love hearing from you, both the silly stuff and the inside stuff. So thanks for taking some time here on The Week in IndyCar, presented by Cooper Tires and the Justice Brothers.
Hey, anytime, man. I appreciate it. Oh, thanks to your sponsors too. That's nice to have sponsors.
Well, you know, I don't have to go to I don't have to sneak into as many races, but it is pretty awesome to have folks that like what you do and want to get behind it and support it. And you know, if only my fat butt could fit inside an Indy car, maybe I'd be asking them to help get me in the 6th car and ready, but at least we got you.
I don't know if you want that, Marshall. That's a tough game.
Look, you just tell me when you want that first yellow to come. I'm your guy, okay?
All right.
I'm the reverse ringer. All right, brother. Well, hey, congrats again on this cool opportunity, and look forward to seeing you soon.